think, and I just say your anyway, let's move on to agenda paper 6, which is about profit and loss, space 9, and recycling. And I think it's best maybe to move to slide 3, which gives a sense of why we're looking at this issue. And in the agenda consultation in 2011, many respondents asked us to address the issue of presenting profit and loss and other comprehensive income. And I think that was as a result of a lack of clarity around the role of profit and loss and OCI, and that there's been no common theme or consistency to the way the IFC had been presenting items in OCO, so the types of items that were in OCI, and also how recycling was dealt with. So once an item was recognised in OCI, when might it be subsequently recognised in profit and loss? And I think this led to a perception that the way OCI was being used was not understood by users, and therefore users would tend to ignore the information that was presented in OCI. So next to slide 4, this sort of illustrates some of the results of that lack of common theme regarding the use of offering off with OCI. So if I look at the first column, these are examples of types of remeasurement that would flow currently directly to profit and loss. You would not even hit OCI. And then the next column would sort of indicate where we're putting in things in OCI, so the pension remeasurement and the change in fair value of certain liabilities, so the earned credit portion of that change in fair value. Those currently go into OCI, but we do not recycle into those items. And then in the third column, this is an example of where we do require items to be presented in other comprehensive income and to be subsequently recycled. And so the examples we have here are the foreign exchange translation differences on foreign subsidiaries, cash flow hedges, and the changes in the discount rate for financial assets measured at fair value to OCI. So you can sort of see here we have different approaches, and it seems to be no consistent theme. So if I move to slide 5, or slide 6, I'm just going to go through how the discussion paper addressed these issues. And when we started looking at distinguishing profit and loss from OCI, we looked to define profit and loss or to describe the distinguishing characteristic by some of the ones that are often used in this context. So this should be distinguished based on whether it's realised or unrealised, the item is recurring or non-recurring, operating and non-operating. But each one of these individual attributes sort of presents difficulties and wasn't sort of a sole attribute we could look to make that distinguishing articulation between profit and loss and OCI. So what the discussion paper approach does is to seek to describe OCI by looking at the characteristics of the types of transactions or situations where we might put items in OCI. We have received some comments that we should have sort of thought hard or tried harder to define profit and loss, but I think we felt that profit and loss has so many different things within it that defining it would be difficult and we would invariably miss something. I think by describing OCI in the discussion paper, we didn't mean to say that we felt that profit and loss was the residual and OCI was the important piece. It was actually the other way around. I think we felt that profit and loss was important, so therefore we wanted to make sure as many things as we could was being profit and loss, and therefore by describing OCI, then it was more defined and restricted. So if I move to slide 7, and so this is a slide where I'll spend a bit more time. This gives you an overview of the types of situations where the discussion paper tried to draw out where we might use OCR. And I'll go through the ones in the middle, so the blue ones, that those situations. And we've used some labels, and I do want to reiterate that these are labels. They are just trying to describe transactions or characteristics we would look to. So the first one would be briefing items. And this really is where we want to get a two-dimensional view of a transaction. So, and this is achieved by the board determining that it should present one measurement in the statement of financial position and the effects of another measurement on the same asset or liability in the profit and loss statement. And effectively, the amount in the cumulative OCI represents the bridge between those two measurement bases. Now, when we talk about recycling really is an automatic response to that measurement choice that's been determined in OCI, in profit and loss. So to follow that measurement basis, the amount in OCI will come out in response to that measurement basis. I think the most example we use most often here is the proposals regarding debt instruments on IFRS 9, and in that case, amortized cost is presented in the profit and loss statement, and fair value is presented in that statement of financial position. And the difference is presented in OCI, and is recycled as you would an amortized cost basis. So when the instrument is sold, the amount of the cumulative OCI will be recycled into profit and loss. The other proposal that fits well in this view is insurance contracts, and here you have two different views of the instrument or interest rates. So in cumulative OCI, you have the difference between the instrument measured on an original interest rate and the current market interest rate. That's all I want to say on this one. Is there any comments? I just know this whole slide.
At our last meeting, major problems with bridging and still have major heartburn. I don't understand it. It's a circular type of reference, and putting something like that in a concept statement to me is unfathomable. Bridging is just saying one thing's different than the other, and even when you deal with IFRS 9, you've decided, and I'm not sure on what basis, that a measurement should be different on the balance sheet versus the income statement. And if IFRS 9, the reason for the difference is because of primary collection of interest and principal. So you came up with that concept, you, in my mind, pulled it out of the air. I'm not quite sure where you pulled it from. There could be a possibility that you'll receive all of your cash flows eventually, but that's not going to be the case all the time. And so what you're doing is putting in the concept statements, this bridging concept, is the result of previous decisions that are theoretical, conceptual, and you're trying to put a bridging concept into the concept statement. It just is exactly the wrong thing to do. I just do not understand it, and I don't know if anyone can explain it to me.
I think there'll be various reasons why the board determines that an instrument should be measured one way for the purposes of the
shouldn't that be the reason? Conceptual reason for OCI, because when there's different measurements, the only place it's going to go is OCI. That's the only place it can go. So if you got to put something in the concepts, it should be the reason why they're different. And OCI is the reason why they're different. Mm-hmm. It's circular. Does not anyone see that? It's obvious to me.
But I think the reason why you want to show those two different views of the one transaction is relevant information. It gives you two ways of looking at that same transaction. And so therefore that provides relevant information, and it provides such relevant information that you want to provide your financial statements. the fact that OCI is the difference, I think, is its reason for being. And it does provide some information, I think.
And we didn't, because if you have a debt, you have a negotiated debt at a certain rate. It is not because the debt could be at another rate today, that it has something to see with what you are today. Your debt is at the rate you have negotiated with your bank. So put the balance sheet at another rate that the one you have is something that is not true.
I'm totally on Olivia's page. Okay? I'm a mining company, I'm an industrial. We just issued $1.25 billion fixed rate debt. That's absolutely not possible for me to settle early.
But the
liabilities case is at fair value. So I've got an amortized because of IFRS 9, you end up with fair values. They don't make sense in industrials as Bob says. It's part of a coming up with a justification that fits the current standards of the issue. Not why is OCI important. Not we've got something called OCI now justified because we created it ourselves from other standards. You've created a concept to support a current practice. Concepts are created in advance of current practice, not to define a current practice. And this is justifying why we have different views of money. The concept should be, are those views...
Kevin said it very well.
Are those views correct?
You're trying to say a disconnect currently in practice that's kind of made up over the years, and you're going to put that into a concept? You should never do that.
I mean, it's a concern that you feel that fair value should never have been...
I want to know the reason that you're trying to answer of why there's OCI and justify it. But when you go circular and say, because current practice says it treats the balance sheet different from the income statement, the only place I can have is OCI. So you've made a conscious decision, all of those projects, of OCI. What you fail to do is define what you mean by OCI, and what's really scary is you're going to put this bridging concept in, which is not a concept, it's just mathematics. You should never do that with concepts. It's disastrous.
Yeah, that because it would be possible that the board could explore two types of measurements. You call them three things, but sometimes I can hear. Oh, we call it two types of measurements on the financial statement. So one type of measurement in the profit and loss statement of comprehensive income, and one type of measurement in the finances, in the balance sheet.
Isn't that what OCI is?
And I think, but this is a subset of current uses of OCI. This is not saying there's an amount in P&L and there's an amount in balance sheet, and this is the bridge between those two amounts. It's saying that there's one measurement being used in the balance sheet, there's another measurement being used to derive the profit or loss numbers. It's not the measure itself. So in this particular example, which is taken from a particular standard based on a particular decision of the board made in the past, what the board decided there was that fair value being used in information in the balance sheet. Information based on amortized costs would be useful in profit or loss. And the notion there is the numbers you generate in profit or loss are derived from a coherent measure, which in this particular example is amortized costs.
There should be a concept there of how you come to those decisions. That concept's OCI. I'm going to stop. I'm going to get frustrated as last time. I don't know. I can't understand why they don't see it. It's obvious.
Can you articulate something differently and say what the concept is? The concept here is that sometimes a different performance is measured differently from the way on balance sheet is measured.
Why?
That's the concept.
Yeah, why?
So what you're looking for is more information. Because the problem is with OCI, we completely, OCI is a mechanism.
Yeah.
To forget the mechanism.
Okay.
The principle is it acceptable that from time to time we can have a different data on the income statement to the balance sheet? And think of the fair valuation of fixed assets. Sometimes the fair valuation of fixed assets tells me a lot about the capital I have available in my entity. But the income statement movement on the fair value of fixed assets is meaningless. It doesn't tell me anything about performance. So is that what we should be trying to spend more time in? Is why would the assets, why would operating from the balance sheet differ from performance on the income?
Yeah.
And it makes sense. OCI is the mechanism.
OCI is the bottom line.
I think we kind of came at that obliquely because there are a couple of statements in the conceptual framework that we don't always link directly to the discussion. And it's one, the point I'm thinking of, Christy, is that neither the balance sheet nor the income statement has the primacy. That we have to consider each separately rather than saying we're going, this is Daryl's characterization turned another way, that there may be times we conclude to have two different measures rather than saying you always have to choose either one or the other.
And that's what I like, if you tag it to what's also in the conceptual framework for the business model, so that it makes perfect sense that during investment property, you would have property, plant, equipment at fair value. And if you are using that same property instead to produce goods, you would carry it at historical cost. And therefore, you could end up with this mismatch following a business model. Carrying on, it means that for a bank, it might be very good for them to have their assets and liabilities at fair value. But the fact that I have similar assets and liabilities as an industrial, fair value is a business model, wrong answer. And it's how you and that's why I think this model of bridging says, well, once you've decided an asset is this, it doesn't matter what your business model is, you're all on that page. And that's not the right answer either.
I think that this section doesn't go to that last statement, that regardless of what your business model is, it's always X. I think the kind of starting point, so we might not connect well enough with this, are.
Well, I think there is a connection with the measurement section. And the measurement section says that you measure an asset or a liability depending on an asset, depending on how it's expected to contribute to future cash flows, and a liability how it's been fulfilled or settled. It also talks about how when you determine, the board is going to determine the measure, it should look at not only the effect on the balance sheet, but also on the income statement. So the both of them would need to be considered. In some circumstances, it would think there might be two measurements that would need to develop the information, and the board at that time would need to consider whether to require the disclosure of one and the presentation of one in the primary financial statement. But another alternative may be to present them differently. So in one primary financial statement, which is one measure, and in another primary financial statement, with a profit and loss, or in balance sheet, a profit and loss, in another measure. So,
in the north.
Sorry?
Or in the north.
So that's the decision process that through measurement the board determines. If the board determines that it does want to reflect the results of those measures, both in the primary, so one in the profit and loss, but one in the balance sheet, then that's when OCI becomes the mechanism which bridges effectively that decision. So I think there is some backing, perhaps not in this paper, but it is sitting in the middle of the
section. So that's the basis for reaching this determination. If it's not clear, and the explanation given by Darrow makes sense, but it requires the definition of performance. It doesn't exist. What is the performance of an entity during a period? It doesn't exist. So at the end of the day, this theoretically doesn't explain much. I imagine myself trying to explain that for our CEO or our CFO, why something goes into OCI. Oh, there's something called bridging, there's something called transitory, there's something called mismatch. But that won't make sense to her or to him at all.
We're using parking lot in the
telecoms and media. We wouldn't expect it to have the terms bridging, mismatch, and transitory. We try to give them labels to talk about the issues, to talk about the types of transactions or characteristics that we would put, that we might put a transaction in OCI. So I do sort of take on board that I think that the terminology, people have found that confusing. But
in terms of your point about financial performance, you know, Pete has said to us that we should have defined financial performance. But I think financial performance is the thing which the assessors, you know, holistically based on the financial statements. And information about financial performance can be obtained from, you know, many parts of the financial statements, not just the statement of comprehensive income.
But you can use any other name, but you need to specify when something should go into profit or loss. When it's realized or not, it doesn't matter the name, but there needs to be a specification for that. Otherwise, whenever someone feels it's the most relevant information, and then the difference goes into both sides.
Malcolm, we'll continue this for another 5 minutes, then we need to move on to the other area. we can go on for another 5 minutes, I guess.
I have a quick question on slide 7. So does that mean if I, under the narrow approach, then you would have to say pension, that's where we're getting the loss from pension, which I found it sounds, it would have to be in the narrow approach.
Sorry?
Under the narrow approach, would the actual gains and losses have to be in the normal profit or loss?
Yes. Well, it depends on the view of the board, but yeah, if you apply this strictly.
Could you say no transitory, so you have to allocate the transitory item someplace else? I mean, that's actually the
thing. Should I briefly go through these mechanisms and
Where we struggle is that if the conceptual framework is the guidance for the future development standards and how the accounting should be. So those that have to, because we're doing those issues, a choice, have to keep going to the conceptual framework to conclude how to do accounting. The current trial doesn't tell me whether I should end up in OCI. I can only end up with vanity income statement. It doesn't support a user who has to interpret their own accounting to get to OCI. Because it's based at the moment on second guessing what the board is going to conclude whether fair value or amortized cost is the right answer. And there's no fundamental basis as to why amortized cost or fair value is the right answer. So therefore you don't default it.
And I think one point to mention is that the board's preliminary view is that the use of OCI would be the determination of the board. So it could only be permitted or required if specified in an ISO standard. So somebody going to the conceptual framework could not apply it by analogy where there was no standard on that area. So that you wouldn't be in a position of applying it through
the conceptual framework. So therefore, you conceptually need OCI, which effectively is a discretion of every new standard.
No, if the board has a judgment when setting a standard whether it should specify the use of OCI.
So therefore, you can't create a conceptual basis for it.
I think in a sense, this is where some of the stress comes on what we're doing the conceptual framework for.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons we're doing the conceptual framework is to help us as board members in setting future standards. What you're looking for is something that's going to help you as a preparer make the decision whether you want to use OCI. That's probably not what we intend to do.
Well, also to prepare where there is no standard.
Yeah. Yep.
And therefore, I have to create my own.
I think the question point what we're saying is that the way this guidance on OCI is meant to work is this is guidance for us as board members, not for anybody else.
Yeah, but Kevin is pushing back and saying that how is it a conceptual framework?
No,
it's a conceptual framework for a board, but I don't think it's that restrictive.
Because you can't use it unless we say you can use it.
Because it's
more for us than it is.
Yeah, you're saying ourselves in the article by saying that. It's
an appendix A reserved document as opposed to
the framework. What we're trying to do here is we're trying to do some familiar question. What is performance? Performance is the change in my assets and liabilities between two periods.
There were some along and said that there are exceptions. The exceptions are those that we come around the bridging or mismatches. That's when we believe there might be an exception to performance. And in that circumstance, the mechanism is overrided. But the point is, when you start trying to define an exception in the conceptual framework, you say it's standard. That's where we get into a lot of
the. But the other way to look at it is that I don't know whether performance is only income statement. So if performance is not just income statement, but it is the component of income, then it fits in. It's between the two balances, if the performance is always an income statement, yes, this question arises. That's why some of us push back and say, whether we should really look at other components of income, or should we look at income statement?
Isn't it easier to call it exception to the EPS calculation? Because that's what it is.
Yeah.
And then it might fit conceptually into the way.
The income statement is more important. I mean, it's unavoidably more important. Theoretically, you could say the comprehensive income also has its importance, but at the end of the day, that's all across the line.
How would you define performance?
Exactly. I don't know if it's possible to define it perfectly. Maybe it's necessary to come up with an imperfect definition to make it work. But
the difference between the assets and liabilities this year and the assets and liabilities last year?
It should be comprehensive income, something that incorporates all of these modifications and variations. But not all of this should actually be referring to the entity's performance during that same period. I don't know.
So I do not understand how it can be said that the variation in the value of cash flow X and terms is something to say the settlement. Because I don't see the settlement in that point. You have taken instruments to cover the risk of future sales or purchase, and you haven't yet done those sales or those purchase, and because you have the instrument cover your risk, the variation of value of that instrument will be permanent. I don't understand that.
Can I talk about these next
3 minutes? Yes,
please. So the other type of transactions we felt could be presented in OCI were mismatching measurements, and that's where you have a transaction that is part of a wider set of transactions or an overall economic position, but not all parts of that wider transaction are yet in the accounting system. So in a sense, you saw the part of the transaction that occurred in that period in OCI, and then you release it into profit and loss in a subsequent period so it can be reported as part of the broader transaction. And again, recycling is in effect a result of the reason why you put the item in OCI in the first place. It's recycled when it meets in or matches or is combined or can be reported with the other transactions or the wider transaction. And as you suggested, cash flow hedges is a sort of example of that you have the gain or loss on the hedging instrument, and you store that gain or loss in OCI and release it in a subsequent period when it can be reported in combination with the underlying item.
This is the semantic inclusion. So when you are talking about your ratio and the amount of equity you have, that amount is being included.
That's the point. So you would prefer to have the item cost?
I have something in my equity that does not represent anything.
Doesn't represent what?
Anything.
Anything. In OCI or equity?
In equity.
Well, it's an equity because it's an OCI.
Yes.
and it's not something you can realize because then it's not a cash flow hedge. So it's an increase in shareholders as well.
I'm sorry, shareholders as well. real.
Like,
it's a mathematical number.
That's why I think we should and I said this many times that we have to acknowledge OCI to some extent is a parking lot.
Yes.
We have to acknowledge that. And there's nothing wrong in acknowledging that. It is not something we should be offended by it, but that the truth of the matter is that it is in
yes.
most cases.
And therefore the conceptual basis should be it's the dumping ground
no.
where the ball chooses two different
places. The dumping ground here, there is no recycling, but it's parking lot is much better.
Whatever. But then if again, the justification is why
I
need two different measures.
Well, how much reservation I have about bridging, I think there's actually good thought in the mismatch and transitory. I'm not sure if I would go with those exactly, but there's some kind of concept there. And in transitory, I may go a little bit farther and say, of a long-term nature, and that would be that if you're going to hold equity securities for a long-term nature, maybe those shouldn't go to the income statement, even though you don't hold debt securities just as long. But there seems to be some concept there of some kind, whereas bridging, there's just no concept, it's just mathematics. But the bottom two, there's some thought process of why you're doing it.
It's because there's a transitory reason, it's broader, and you have to too broad. But those apply to long-term remeasurements, which are expected to reverse or significantly change over the period, and that we think that by reporting them in OCI, you would actually make profit and loss a more understandable, relevant measure. And here, the issue of recycling is less direct or less automatic. The board would need to determine recycling in a particular a very particular type of transaction, because it may not always be possible to recycle or might not provide relevant information in a subsequent period.
So I come back to my question on pension. If you pull a narrow through, then pension has to go into the income statement, not part of the OCI.
Yeah.
So all that to go against the market if you pull a narrow through.
And you know, we pensions, I think, was one of the discussion points regarding the approaches and whether were there something that we could conceptually put into OCI, could it be, for example, a briefing item? And there were two reasons why we felt that it couldn't be a briefing item. Was one because the measure that results in profit and loss in applying IAS 19 pension isn't a describable, coherent measure. It's effectively an accumulation of the service costs and the revised estimates that you have over the period. So it can't be described like amortized costs or a fair value or a fair value of being a risk credit. So there was that reason. There's also the fact that operationally it was difficult to determine a period in which you could recycle and provide relevant information. So it wasn't going to have, we found it difficult to determine that the period in which a relevant recycling amount would result. So that's why, in answer to your question, that it wouldn't be they wouldn't be reported in OCI under the narrow approach, but under the broad approach they would. Equity investment as well is a question as to what would be the measure that you would report in profit and loss. If you said it was an amortized cost basis, then you'd have to determine appropriate impairment models to do that.
How about own credit? Is that
considered? It could be. It depends on the board's approach to recycling. At the moment, if it's determined that recycling would never provide relevant information, you could characterize own credit as a transitory remeasurement and effectively keep the amount outside of profit and loss on the basis that if the own credit gain or loss would never provide relevant information.
Given the model moral outrage on that issue of home credit, I don't think it's ever going to clean out. So.
But in theory, it should recycle naturally.
I think I agree with you, it should recycle naturally. That's why I said, given the moral outrage, I don't think there will be ever the time when you will recycle.
I mean, and you could characterize this, you could characterize own credit as a breathing item, for example. So, because in effect, what you're saying that in profit and loss, you're wanting to represent the fair trade and fair value of the liability at the fiction of the credit spread at inception. And therefore, what you would do is you actually sold that liability or settled that liability early, which would recycle, and you'd actually recognize that gain or loss that you yeah. realized upon sale. So the way the sort of the terms breaking item and transferring measurement gives you an idea of how to think about or that the considerations the board might need to consider when looking at these types of issues. If they felt that they wanted to produce a measure or represent a measure of profit and loss, it would then sort of lead you to an idea of it having to be a coherent and describable measure. It also would then lead to, you know, the board view on recycling.
Let us give a chance to Hiroshi on recycling.
Yeah. My view is for recycling and the combination of broad approach. And I think the OCI is in a tentative place, and all items previously recognizing OCI should be subsequently recycled. Without this mechanism, some items recognized in OCI are never recognized in profit or loss. I think this is very important. And I think in a sense that in my view is OCI is a mechanism. It's a breathing item in a broad sense. So I think the in a preliminary view, you try to define the OCI. But if you just show some characteristics of OCI and the rest goes to net income. But that approach may be easy, but I think that as a result, the residual number of profit or loss might not be the relevant information. I think you should make effort to directly define the definition of profit or loss. I think the, as you know, SBJ is trying to develop a definition of profit or loss, and probably SBJ has already developed the concept definition of net income, which is a broad sense of realization. I think that might be a difficult way, but it's the I think it's the best way.
Can I ask you a few questions?
Sure.
You said you'd recycle everything. Would that include the actuarial gain and loss on pension?
Yes.
And if so, how would you do it?
Yeah, that's a very difficult question. But the important thing is to full recycling is the primary objective. It's very important. But the mechanism of that's the question of timing. So, for example, you can consider the timing of payment from the company to the pension fund. That's one of the solutions.
The better idea is not to put it in the OCI in the
fund. It's too old.
Yes, Kevin.
Where I struggle, you know, we're all focused on stock exchanges, and all that stock exchange is talked about price earnings ratio. So the concept of something being in shareholders' equity and not ever appearing in an EPS calculation, which is then impacting the price earnings ratio on our stock exchange, is alien to me. Everything is a change in shareholders' wealth, and everything, therefore, should ultimately appear in an EPS calculation. Because that's what EPS, when it was brought out, was designed to achieve. Now, if in 2014, we're now concluding that because of all the remeasurements and the evolving world of accounting, we have this OCI. Well, then Let's turn to EPS statement.
Kevin, in 2009, as a new board member, I proposed that, and I was bashed pretty hard, saying that why do we need to have an EPS and net income? Have an EPS and OCI. You solve all these problems. And I tell you, I was put aside and said, kids, you need to learn.
So what happened? You did a bunch of smack.
Okay, I think in the interest of time, Lucy will give you the floor to you for the rest of the time.
So we've already discussed the difference between the narrow approach and the broad approach. So the narrow approach just having reasonable mismatch in measurement, and the broad approach including reasonable mismatch and capacity. I think the board also preliminary views that if did retain profit and loss, it does consider that to be a primary indicator of the return the entity has made on its resources during the period, and therefore that retained profit and loss means that you have a OCI. The board also had a preliminary view that the use of OCI is restricted to the measurements only, so we wouldn't seek to apply OCI to the initial measurements or on initial recognition, but also that it wouldn't apply to all the measurements, so we wouldn't be expecting to see, you know, impairments, for example, to go through OCI. We'd expect that to do a good profit and loss, and I think people would want us to do that. We talked about the two approaches. We've also mentioned that, again, the use of OCI would be the decision by the board, so it would have to be something to use, so that it would only be by commission or requirement under the law. And I think page slide 9 gives you a summary of what we've discussed in comparing both the narrow and the broad approach. The final thing that I want to talk about is slide 10, which is an alternative approach, which it's not well supported by the board.
There are only two of us that support it, so we have an alternative.
But another approach we could do is not to require or define a subtotal profit and loss in the conceptual framework, but leave that definition up to IFRS. It would mean that the notion of recycling would not be considered, because ultimately, right, if you didn't define or have something conceptually different between profit and loss and OCI, there would be no reason for recycling. It would result in items being recognised in the statement of consequences in some way or another. So that approach is also in the paper. So
change the EPS, how did you get there? You might want to write a comment on that.
And I don't know if anybody has any further comments.
I think we exhausted quite a bit.
Can I just one observation? I'm actually kind of glad to see so much controversy and strength of views, because I really worry about the conceptual framework, especially at this stage, kind of failing below people's radar screens on the it's not a final standard, it's not about to be a final standard. It's several steps back, and I'll deal with it later. And this is really, it is intended to be the anchor for this, the work we do in future. So it's good rather than disappointing to have people wound up about it.
So Mary Carolina Lofty, he attended the South African Discussion Forum on the Conceptual Framework. It was the first discussion forum where we actually set aside the entire day.
I actually echo what Mary said, because I'm actually in charge of our outreach for the conceptual paper, and it notices quite less response from the parents on the conceptual paper. And so it's quite interesting to hear that preparers like you guys are here are interested in it.
But they are exceptional preparers.
So please inform
when we expect to have the exposure drop published. 2014. 2014. 2014.
2014.
2014 after June 30th. mid-2014 is the timing for to have the photograph. So we have 7 months between now and the photograph.
Assuming you don't get 673 comment letters.
674.
And if we do, then you might have to take a bit longer.
So please very fast.
Okay.
I've got a request for you when you respond to me on this point, because it's not going to be terribly helpful to us, I think, if you just say there isn't a concept here, or you don't need a concept here later. I mean, what we were trying to do was to set up some criteria for when OCI can be used, some criteria explaining what it's about and what it's trying to achieve. So if you don't like the way we've done it, it would be very helpful if you could give us some points to the way we think we should try to do it. The point maybe is that you think we shouldn't use it, or maybe, I think just saying standard level of exception, I don't think is what most of the responses to the agenda consultation wanted us to do. They actually wanted us to come up with some criteria for when to use it. Now, we've made our attempt. So far, you don't seem to particularly like it. But I think it will help us a lot if you can come up with alternatives if you don't like this one.
Yeah. I thought you did try to put things in sensible logic. You might not be my starting point of some of the logic, but I mean, I can't afford to talk about that.
Good. Should we need the 3:15 and get on to 14 limitations of the review? Thank you for your participation.